So that brings us now to our discussion agenda, item B. And this is the discussion of the governor's May revision of the proposed fiscal year 12-13. As I invite Ms. Ana Matasantos, Director, Department of Finance, to have a seat at the table, I would like to ask those council members listening by phone to please state your name and afterward then mute your phone button. Who's on the line?
You.
Miriam Krinsky.
Mark Robinson. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us. Ms. Matasantos, we welcome you and we all appreciate. We know how busy you are and how much demand is on your time for you to talk about this budget. So thank you for appearing here in person to do that. And the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chief. And thank you, members of the Judicial Council. Can you hear me okay?
A little louder.
Is this better? No?
No.
All right. I'll just be loud. I'll be okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chief. Thank you, members of the council. Appreciate the opportunity to come before you. And if I may, with your indulgence, I'd like to provide a little bit of background on the budget. And before I get to that, I just wanted to reiterate, first, you know, the governor's appreciation, recognition of the independence of the judiciary, of the independence of the branch, of the independence and the importance of the branch as it relates to administering the rule of law, which is, from our perspective, a critical element of working democracy. And as we look at the rule of law and we look at the constitutional obligations before the governor and before the legislature, enacting a balanced budget is a constitutional requirement for the legislature and for the governor. And it is that difficulty in light of our reduced revenues and other challenges that brings us to some of the difficult reductions and difficult topics that we've talked about before and that we'll be talking about today. So if I may, I appreciate the opportunity and want to talk a little bit about some of our challenge. All right, let's see if I can actually run this thing. How do we get the whole thing? Okay, get some help with this. There we go. So as you know, when Governor Brown came into office, the state faced a $26.6 billion budget deficit, and it faced a budget problem of about $20 billion each year in terms of the ongoing gap between expenditures called for under law and revenues. The making of that budget deficit was manyfold. First, the state had an underlying budget problem coming into the recession, so we had a structural deficit, about $7 billion coming into the recession. Then the recession dropped tax revenues by 24%. Those revenues have not yet recovered. It's going to be several more years before revenues, general fund revenues, are back to where they were in 2007-08. And budgets in the last decade relied on a lot of short-term solutions that did not materialize, and other temporary fixes. And as such, with 75 to 85% of those prior solutions being temporary, one-time, or not occurring, the budget problem as the governor faced when he came into office was $26.6 billion and $20 billion each year. Last year, the budget made substantial progress, and a lot of that progress I know came with additional difficult choices for the judiciary in light of the reductions that were made to balance the state budget. The budget made very deep spending cuts, $16 billion. Billions of those spending cuts were occurred when the taxes previously in effect were not extended. That included $150 million in additional reductions to the judiciary, as you know. Today, the ongoing budget problem has been reduced from an ongoing problem of $20 billion to about $8 billion. As a result of all the reductions that have been made to date, general fund spending as a share of our economy is down to where it was in 1972-73. And if we look at total spending is also at very low levels that we've generally only seen at comparable levels during the recessionary periods in the 1980s and 90s. as you know, but I'd like to take an opportunity to talk a little bit about some of the other reductions that have been made in the budget to date. As you know, in order to reduce that structural gap from $20 billion to $8 billion, there have been very difficult reductions across state government and to a whole host of services. Entire programs have been eliminated, including refundable child care and dependent credits, Williamson Act subventions, redevelopment agencies, adult day health care, and other services across the state. The state has reduced state government by 15,000 positions. The governor's May revision actually doubles that number and permanently reduces the state's workforce by 30,000 positions. The state has eliminated 20 different entities, and that number under the governor's proposal would go to more than 80. The Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation expenditures will be reduced by $1.5 billion. That reverses a trend where the Department of Corrections accounted for a greater share of general fund spending than in the past. It had risen to 11% of general fund expenditures being spent on the Department of Corrections. These reductions will reduce that trend and bring down that spending at 7.5% of general fund. I bring that up because it's those types of reductions that will help the state manage its budget in an ongoing manner, but it will also provide more sustainable, consistent funding to other priorities like the courts and education. State grants for low-income seniors and persons with disabilities have been reduced to the level in effect in 1983. They've been reduced by $156, or 30%, and this is the grant that's provided for individuals who are living at the poverty level. CalWORKs have been reduced to the 1987 level. General support for the University of California and California State University has been cut by approximately 25%. Some of those reductions have been offset by fee revenues, hence some of the tuition increases that we've been seeing. And K-14 education funding remains $9 billion below the level in effect in 2007-08. As a result of all of these actions, the annual budget shortfall has been reduced by more than half, from $20 billion to $8 billion. The governor's May revision closes that gap in each year under the projections, as well as balances the problem for this coming year in 12-13. The May revision, why are we here? The May revision essentially updates the problem definition that we were looking at in January. So the governor's January budget balanced the $9.2 billion budget gap estimated at that time. And at that time, as you know, we were not contemplating contemplating continuation of last year's reductions, but not contemplating additional reductions to the judiciary as part of the proposal in chief. However, it turns out that our revenue projection was too high, that the loss of those revenues, contrary to how it usually works, actually triggers an increase in Proposition 98. And we also have some losses of property taxes that have further increased general fund costs in the area of education. The federal government, both the federal administration as well as federal courts, have blocked a number of cuts. And the combined effect of those pieces, minus changes in caseload and some reimbursements that we've received, et cetera, mean that today the governor is looking at balancing a budget of $15.7 billion in order to rebuild the required reserve. We're looking at $16.7 billion of total solutions. The governor's proposal has a balanced approach to close this gap. It looks at $8.3 billion in additional cuts, $5.9 billion in revenues, $2.5 billion in other proposals. The bulk of those ongoing cuts are in health and human services, so there's about $1.2 billion in reductions to the Medi-Cal program. There's about $900 million in reductions to the CalWORKs program. And as I mentioned, that's reductions on top of where the grant levels are today. We're looking at additional reductions to child care programs, changes to Proposition 98 guarantee, as well as the difficult cuts to the judiciary that I will speak to. The governor's budget assumes revenues from the initiative. Without those revenues, additional cuts would be necessary. And the budget also stabilizes the budget, balances the budget in an ongoing manner, and allows the state to repay its budgetary debt, an important thing to do in light of our continued problem. $5 billion of the problem that we face today is associated with decisions of the past, borrowings in the past, and other things that have added to our deficit. So avoiding that type of decision in the future and paying down those obligations is important to rebuild our fiscal capacity. We took a look in developing the May revision at first we stepped back and looked at where is funding today. And as you mentioned, Chief, many actions that you have taken in the Judicial Council, as well as actions by the legislature, have had the effect of, while the general fund for support for the courts has reduced substantially, you've identified a variety of other sources, some on a one-time basis, many on an ongoing basis, to backfill those reductions. And as we, based on our look of it, when we compare where were trial courts and where was the trial court program before we came into the economic recession, compared to where it is now, we see that even after the May revision reductions, trial court funding would be 1.5% above the 2007-08 level. Today, it's 7% higher than it was in 2007-08. And as we look at other components of the judiciary, we see that the budget for the Supreme Court, the budget for the Courts of Appeal, the budget for the Judicial Council are all reduced from the level in effect before this budget challenge became particularly pronounced. As we looked at the need for additional reductions, we looked at a couple of things. One was, what is the, you know, where are we relative to implementation of reforms put into place in the 1990s? What is the role of local reserves in the context of a state-funded local court system? And what are some of the approaches that we might have available for achieving savings in a manner that minimizes the impact on court operations where possible? We know that many reductions have been made, that costs have risen, and that you've been dealing with a lot of these difficulties. But we see that, based on our review, that you've done a good job of trying to protect the trial courts where possible. And we see that that trial courts have substantial reserves that we think are available to help us achieve some general fund savings, while also being able to protect those court operations. So a couple of principles. Maintaining local reserves is a lower priority in light of the state's fiscal challenges. And, in fact, we go a step further and believe that the local reserve system should be modified, and that and I can talk about that in about 15 seconds. Second, court construction program, we believe it should be reduced and it should be delayed to help fund court operations and to achieve additional savings, as we're looking at all the other difficult choices that this budget presents us with. And the last piece is we believe that there are some elements where it makes sense for state employees working for the judicial branch to be treated similarly to other state employees, particularly in the area of retirement contributions. So individual proposals in the governor's budget, in the governor's May revision, so you know, achieves $544 million in savings. The bulk of the bulk of that is one-time savings. We're looking at $125 million of ongoing savings. The bulk of the reductions that you've mentioned is one-time. So on the area of trial court reserves, the May revision proposes to restructure trial court reserves. It essentially says, look, if we have a state-funded local court system, we should have a state-level reserve that is managed by the council that is available to local trial courts based on rules that are uniformly applied across the state, that where you look at, you know, emergencies that arise, inability of a local court to be able to achieve savings, and have those dollars available to deal with those emergencies, to be able to maintain access to justice, but not having but having that as a statewide pot, not having the diversity that we find today, kind of consistent with some of the principles in our judgment of trial court reform and the interest in having equal access to justice across the state. So we look at creating a statewide reserve of 3%. Why 3%? Because that's consistent with reserve requirements in other areas, and we believe it's a sufficient level to be able to deal with some of the issues that may arise. As I mentioned, we think the allocation of the reserve should be done by the Judicial Council, and it should be based on uniform criteria established in law, things like emergencies, unavoidable shortfalls, contracts that have been entered into that can't be changed, etc. The budget uses local reserves to maintain court operations. At the end of 10-11, trial court reserves equaled $562 million. We basically assume that a portion of those reserves have, we apply a discount factor, so we assume a portion of those reserves have been spent or in the current year. We also know that this part of some of the things that you were looking at previously based on information provided to the legislature and to our department. In January, you were looking at $100 million of potential redirection to be able to deal with the cuts of the legislature from last year if the legislature maintains those. So we were basically looking at about $300 million of that $562 as the general fund savings. The way in which we envision the statute being set forth is that basically it would be specific, and it would say that the allocation of each court shall be offset by available reserves. So it would be very specific in statute in terms of how it's to be administered. And in our judgment, because of the availability of reserves, this will mitigate additional operational reductions. It does mean that as trial courts look at the 13-14 budget, that they're going to have some additional challenges ahead in terms of operational making the operational changes necessary to be able to accommodate the reductions that were already put into place by the 2011 Budget Act. Next element of the proposal, the delay in court construction. So we believe that this is also the bulk of this. $190 million of this $240 million is a one-time reduction. We believe, we know you've already initiated the process of reviewing the construction program, looking at the construction standards, looking at facility standards, looking at courts, looking at the relationship between appreciate the opportunity that we had to visit with Judge O'Malley about and look at the ways in which the construction program in Contra Costa has provided opportunities to have some efficiencies and change the operation, and looking at trying to have a better understanding of how the construction program helps the balance of the program itself operate in terms of the people movement and other elements that take a look at that with you. The budget, the May revision would pause the construction of the next round of projects, so up to 38 projects affected. It proposes to use those funds on a one-time basis for operations, but it assumes that the program going forward will be scaled back, hence the $50 million of ongoing savings. Projects ready for construction could proceed after a review of cost and scope, and we would work with you on that. So one project, San Diego project, would go forward. Another six projects we put into the category of projects that we think should be reviewed further, and those could continue next year. The balance of the projects would be paused until after the program review, and we see what the rescope program looks like going forward. As I mentioned, one of the principals was looking at compensation for state court employees compared to other state employees. As you know, state employees contribute between 8 and 11% of their salary to retirement, and the contribution rates, which were recently increased for state employees, have not been increased for state employees of the courts. We think that we should look at increasing those contribution rates to the 8% and discontinue the practice of the employer pickup of the employee share. That's consistent with the governor's pension proposal. The governor's pension reform proposal, in fact, goes further than this proposal, and the governor believes that some of these very changes should also be made at all levels of government for all employees, including at the local level. This proposal is specific to state court employees, but we think many of the same principles make sense for other employees. Ongoing reductions of $125 million, as I've mentioned, $50 from court construction, $75 million from operations. And with that, I will take any questions or address anything else you'd like me to.
Thank you, Ms. Matasantos, for that presentation. And I know council has a number of questions. And so the first one I'll ask Judge Wesley.
Good morning, and thank you for being here. In looking at the chart that was provided in the May revise, it indicates that the plan is to use $402 million in port reserves in the 12-13 budget year. Am I correct?
Yes.
So I actually have two questions. Do you believe there will be $402 million in unrestricted dollars in the trial court reserves at the end of 2011 and 12 budget year? If it's not there, how do you envision the branch will come up with $402 million? My second question is, once the reserves are taken, where is it anticipated that the 3% statewide allocation to the trial courts that you intend to be held by the AOC, where is that going to come from? Is that an additional 3% cut to the courts off their trial court funding each year? Also, in the documents that were provided, it describes the 3%. In one document, in the May revise, it says the 3% will come from the statewide allocation of trial courts. In the Department of Finance document, it says the 3% is a total of trial court expenditures. It's a 3% of the total, and I wasn't sure what was meant by it. So those are my questions.
Okay. On your first question, yes. I mean, our expectation is that at the end of 10-11, there were $562 million in available reserves. Based on our estimate, we believe $402 will be available. We understand that some at the local level, which is consistent with what we've seen in other areas when similar proposals have been set forth, have been looking at encumbrances and potential for additional encumbrances before the law is changed. I think we're looking at similar provisions to those that were included in the redevelopment law in terms of looking at obligations that are entered into after the proposal is made and whether or not those obligations are to be valid. We think it would be short-sighted for local courts to be looking to spend those reserves because the appropriation would be reduced and the statute would set forth that the allocations are to be offset by the available reserves. So based on our calculation, we think this amount of dollars is available. And we would urge folks to be prudent in the coming weeks because the appropriation at the state level would be capped and the law would be specific about offsetting those reductions with the available reserves.
And
I'm sorry, and I owe you an answer to your second question. Basically, we're looking in this chart when we look at 12-13 in order to have an apples to apples comparison. We've added the trial court security expenses. Those are not part of the base and would not be part of the 3%. But basically, 3% of the remaining appropriation would be held back. That's roughly $80 million. And that's the allocation that we assume would be provided by the council to courts on a needs basis as emergencies or additional costs that can't be avoided arise. So that's how we see that being structured. I hope I answered the question.
I think you did. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Justice Hull.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you, Chief. Am I being heard here?
Yeah.
All right. And thank you, Ms. Matosatos, for your time this morning. But to your answer to Judge Wesley's question just now, you mentioned that of the $562 million in reserves, you estimated that $402 million would be available. Can you tell us how you arrived at that estimate?
We basically looked at what has been the pattern in terms of building reserves in the past, and we just used a discount factor. We've seen the reserve levels being relatively consistent. The reserves were actually there were some additional dollars going into the reserves in 10-11 from where they had been at the end of 9-10, and we just applied a 20% discount factor, trying to be conservative in our estimate.
Okay, thank you. But your answers suggest to me that I mean you didn't undertake any survey or county by county survey as to the restricted versus the unrestricted funds or anything like that.
We did not. We looked at the availability of information. We know that the recent accounting rules have changed recently, and looking at comparable the standards have been put in place with GASB have moved more things into the restricted category. This may require some changes in things that were planned for particular purposes, and having those dollars be redirected to support operations. There may be plans for some of these dollars. We don't see all of these dollars being committed to things that can't be modified. In terms of we looked at the descriptions and we looked at and based on the GASB rules and the changes, it's hard to, you know, one person's encumbrance and one person's commitment and one person's restriction is not necessarily the same across the board. So if we looked at the overall reserves and what we look at what the standard reserves level have been, we believe this amount of dollars are available. It may require some changes at the local level in terms of plan expenditures.
Thank you.
Justice Baxter.
Yes. And let me add my thanks for your attendance. Appreciated your presentation. As I understand the provisions in the May revision, the Judicial Council would make the allocation to the individual trial courts. Is that correct?
The Judicial Council would make the allocations. The allocation in the law would be, there would be a requirement that that allocation be offset by the reserve requirements. So there would be more specificity in how the allocations are to occur than there has been in the law in the recent years.
And that allocation would take place in July, is that correct? I guess my question is a very pragmatic one, and that is, how can the Judicial Council make a determination of what amount of reserves are available in each and every county by July?
I think we look at saying we provide an estimate and look at saying these amounts are done. That's part of the process and things that folks are going to have to look at and would come back to you with in terms of if there are some emergency issues, if there are some contracts and encumbrances in those reserves that can't be modified, and that would be part of what the 3% holdback could be used for. So, but we're looking at early allocation based on estimates of available reserves.
Justice Miller.
Like everyone else, I'm going to thank you for being here and your willingness to take questions, and we all certainly appreciate that. And because the reserves are a major part of the May revision and certainly of great concern to the trial courts and the Judicial Council, I'm going to follow up on that. So if I understand, in essence, starting with your answer to Judge Wesley and the other two questioners, you've made that decision already that there's 562 available and that of that, 402 is going to be utilized in the May revise.
Yes.
All right.
And we've envisioned that the statute would be specific to that end and that it would provide specific instructions to offset those reductions. So, and that amount of dollars that would be provided statewide and the statewide allocation would be capped. So if there are decisions that are made to spend down those reserves between now and when the budget is enacted, those courts would be looking at a challenge because the budget would be based on the assumption that those reserves are available.
All right. Thank you.
Judge Rubin.
Allow me to also thank you for being here this morning. I want to follow up. I'm from the California Judges Association, and I wanted to follow up on a question by Judge Baxter. Obviously, the reserves are a very sensitive issue for us around the state, and I'm just trying to track this a little bit better than I am. And that is, it seems like there's going to be some fairly specific instructions coming from the governor's office regarding the spending down of the reserves. That's what I'm getting. You're nodding yes. And the question is it going to be, for instance, there are some courts that have done well at maintaining reserves. Other courts have had more challenges with that. Will there be some sort of offset for that? Will there be, in effect, some reserves transferred from one court that has more to say, course it up less?
Each individual's court's allocation would be offset by that individual's court's reserve. So the reserves wouldn't be moving from one jurisdiction to the other. The allocation would be set forth, and that allocation would be reduced by the available reserve. The courts that have been working, as we heard from Stanislaus, to achieve the operational efficiencies, when 13-14 comes and when they're looking at what this means in terms of their available reductions, they're going to be in better shape than those who haven't. But each individual court's reserve would be used to offset that individual court's, that individual jurisdiction's statewide allocation. So there wouldn't be reserves moving from one jurisdiction to the other. Does that answer your question?
Somewhat. For instance, let's say, you know, let's make up a county, Palomar County, you know, non-existent county. So that they've had a lot of reserves. And let's say another county, another fictitious county, has spent down, has nothing. Would the county with more reserves, Palomar County in this instance, would they would be reduced by the amount they had in reserve, whereas a county that didn't have any would not get a reduction in their allocation. Is that right?
Yeah.
So in effect, though, the reserve is transferred across, if not practically in effect.
Palomar's reserve allocation would be offset. The May revision moves away from the notion of local reserves and really looks at how, in light of the fact that we really now have a state-funded local court system where the maintenance of efforts are capped, where many of the fees are established at the state level. You know, if there are some local fund sources, and those local fund sources would remain unaffected. But for the bulk of the funding, we're really saying, if the state is now funding the program, how does a local reserve practice fit within that? And in our judgment, it makes sense to transition to a statewide reserve concept. So Palomar County would have a lesser allocation because that reserve would be used to offset the allocation, and Mildred County, the one that had the smaller reserve, would receive a lesser reduction in her allocation in terms of how it would work. Going forward, and maybe this is an opportunity to talk about the work group that the May revision speaks to, and the task force. And going forward, we think that, you know, more than a decade after many of the reforms have been put in place, it makes sense to look at the administrative structures that have been set in place, and it makes sense to look at the first step is this us revisiting this notion of local reserves versus a statewide reserve. But it seems to us it makes sense to do a review of, how is the state doing relative to implementation of trial court funding and other reforms? Have we achieved the goals of providing equal access to justice? And looking not at the administration of justice side, but at the actual administrative structure and the statutory framework and all of those different elements, and this kind of fits into that overall perspective.
Mr. Carlson.
Yeah, Alan Carlson from the Orange County Superior Court. And again, thank you for coming and talking to us. I'm confused as to how you can get to a 1.5% increase in trial court funding over time. I'm thinking maybe you added construction money in as part of local court, trial court now in the more recent times, so that there's an apples and oranges problem with that chart.
No, we looked at what are the state budget totals, and we looked at what were the funds that were provided in 2007-08. We've made adjustments to reflect the offsets that have been done by the council and by the legislature, and we start with a number of 3316, $3.3 billion in 2007-08, and then we look at those adjustments. This is not looking at the capital cost. It does make an adjustment so that we have, again, an apples-to-apples. So there were some elements of the facilities programs that had been moved from the trial court budget to a separate budget. We adjusted that so that the facilities expenses that were included in 2007-08 in the trial court budget, we split out those going forward, but we look at the actual dollars, and what we've seen is a significant reduction in the general fund support. And we've seen that the general fund just last year alone dropped by 20%. But we've seen that through the actions of the legislature and through the actions of the council, those funds have been replaced with fee revenues, penalty revenues, other revenues, or redirection from the modernization funds from the elimination in the coming year, from the elimination of CCMS and other elements to hold trial court budgets level. So we're happy to walk through the data, but we basically just went back and said, let's look at exactly what an apples-to-apples tells us. And an apples to apples tells us that, you know, and this is not to say that costs haven't risen, but the actual level of allocations, when we look at the general fund and the other funds combined, has remained level and, in fact, has increased by 1.5% after the May revision. Right now, it's increased by 7% up to the current year. So it's for next year that we're looking at a 1.5%.
I'd like to see the numbers because I'm down over 20% over the time period. So it doesn't make any sense at all how we got
I'm happy to provide
number.
Them, and we're happy to walk through.
The second thing I'd like to ask is picking up on the reserve question. So use Palomar and Mildred counties. It seems to me the only way if you've got $100 million going to the trial courts and we've allocated that out to the courts, and then there's another $300 million in this case using the actual number for the reserves that you're going to allocate to those courts that had the reserves, the only way I can see where you can say that the courts that had reserves get benefited is if somehow that first $100 million gets allocated differently than in the past. Because if we allocate the money that we do get the way we've done in the past, and then you subtract from that allocation our reserves, you're transferring the money from the people who saved money to the people who didn't. It doesn't. I don't see how you can get there the way you've described it. So
the way in which we look at it is looking at what's happening to the program on a statewide basis. And as we look at the program on a statewide basis, how do we, and the need to achieve additional reductions, similar to the difficult reductions that we're looking at in all different areas of the budget, how do we do that in a manner that minimizes the effect to operations where possible? And so we look at the local reserves as an available offset to that statewide allocation. The benefit to the entire judiciary system, consistent with the principle of equal access to justice, is that we're looking at minimizing the effect on operations by using those reserves. We are fundamentally looking at changing the way in which the funding structure works, because in our judgment, as we look at the entire program and how the entire program is funded, it seems to us if a statewide reserve with a state that is available for emergencies and allocations made at the front end is what makes sense. In the school districts area of the world, for example, we do have local reserves. But school districts are funded with a combination of property taxes, state general fund, and parcel taxes, as well as federal funds. So it's a different structure. As we look at this as the reimbursements from the maintenance of effort levels come into the overall accounts, and we look at how this should be funded, it seems to us we should use those local reserves for the branches overall, minimize cuts to the trial court as a statewide program. And that's how we're looking at it.
Commissioner Alexander.
So if I understand this right, what you're trying to do is use this coming budget year to make that transition. So in this budget year, you're saying those courts that have reserves are going to have their allocation reduced, so they basically spend all their reserves this year to meet their operating expenses. And then the following year, it would be limited to this 3% that would be allocated to the state, who would then, the judicial council would then decide which courts would get a portion of that.
Got it. The only piece is that there would be a 3% reserve available next year as well.
Okay. So you're spending it down to 3%.
We're spending we look at the local reserves as tax. These are taxpayer dollars that are available in accounts that can be used to offset the overall allocation to make dollars available to maintain a program on a statewide basis. And then we say, as we make the transition, we also need to have we're looking at spending down those reserves in terms of the offset that would be required to each particular allocation. We also think we see the possibility for unforeseen circumstances to occur or for some obligations to be in effect that cannot be modified. And it seems to us that the council needs a statewide allocation that is available to deal with those circumstances as they arise over the course of the next year.
And when you got to the dollar amount, that includes the restricted funds and the unrestricted funds.
We look at the 562, and then we offset it by about 20%, and then that's how we're generally arriving at our numbers.
Judge Herman.
I think that answers my question. Again, I want to thank the behalf of the council for the educational session. It's helpful to us. Getting to the 20% discount, did that in any way take into account an evaluation of what funds were actually restricted within the trial courts? I mean, for example, there's a number of funds that are legislatively restricted where, without change in legislation, we're told we can't spend these funds on operations or on our local general funding. So was that figure chosen, taken into account actual reserves or actual restricted funds, or is that just basically an overall shot at a discount?
It was really looking at using a conservative assumption based on what we've seen in the past. If there's a sense in, and again, we're, you know, the May revision is now out, and we'd welcome if there's data that we should be looking at, if there's additional information that we should consider as we look at this issue, we're happy to take a look at it. But we basically say the reserves have generally been leveled. They increase in 10-11, then we assume that there's some spending of those reserves going on this year as courts are phasing in the operational changes to deal with the reductions made last year. So we basically just look at what do we think is a reasonable to conservative assumption of how much of those reserves may have been spent.
And just one follow-up, if I may. So in terms of individual trial courts, if an individual trial court has restricted funding that's in excess of the 20% in terms of what you're looking the council to do by way of allocation, both of cuts and funding, is that a court-by-court analysis, or is it just each court is looking at operationalizing their reserves net 20%?
Basically, and we're open to talking through how to make this work. Our notion is that we would specify the reserve levels and direct the offset of the amount. And then if things arise, issues arise, if there are emergencies, things that can't be changed, then that's what the 3% holdback would be available for.
Judge O'Malley.
Thank you again for being here, and also thank you very much for visiting our court and learning, you know, how facilities help to make operations better and more efficient. So I thank you very much. A couple of questions. With regard to the emergency funds and how they'd be allocated, will there be specific language as to how that's to be allocated, or are you leaving the methodology to the council to decide and establish, you know, a structure for that?
We think it would make sense to provide some of the criteria in statute. We think it also would make sense to provide some specific dates. We want to make sure that it's not a first-come, first-served type of operation, but that there are specific dates by which all courts have to submit the information to the council, and the council then makes the valuation. So some criteria, but...
Okay, thank you. And then the commission that you've talked about forming to look at the overall, you know, if we're achieving the goals that we want to do for state court funding, what do you envision the authority of that commission to be, a fact-finding body, to be an advisory body, or to actually have authority to be able to do allocation?
We see that as a fact-finding body. We would want to work with the chief and want to do this in partnership with the judiciary. It also will be legislative interest as well as other stakeholders. And we see this as a fact-finding body to look at the administrative side of the house, and we look at it as something that could inform the governor's budget, something that he could consider as he looks at next year and any additional changes that he deems appropriate for submittal to the legislature.
And just one final. Right now, when we allocate to the trial courts, we've been using a RAS model, and a pro rata share goes to each individual court. Would that change, or is this the same type of allocation that would go to the courts minus their fund balance?
We would not change the – I think that we're basically looking at – we looked at building the May revision, trying to do it consistent with how we see that you've done 11-12. As well as changes that we understood based on discussions in January that you were looking at for the coming year. The very different thing that would be done this year is that the budget and the statute would be specific as we envision it in terms of both the distribution of the reductions to the different segments of the judiciary, as well as this notion of being very specific and very directive about the way in which the allocations should be offset with the with the reserves.
Okay. Thank you. First, Kim Turner.
Thank you very much, Chief. I have a question about, and certainly you're well aware that the way courts are funded is very complicated. There's state money. There are local revenues that are also generated throughout the year. And let's talk about perhaps one of the local revenues that I think the courts across California have been able to generate that have, I think, assisted us in this difficult time over the last 4 years, and that's civil assessment. So in right now, civil assessment is... The revenue is essentially in the same budget with all of the funding that we get for court operations. And so my concern is that by, taking any surplus revenue that remains at the end of the year, unspent money, and saying we're going to reduce the court's allocation next year to the tune of whatever those dollars may be. So if my court has $100,000 left over, then my budget next year will be $100,000 short to sort of cause me to use that. But it de-incentivizes the courts from actually collecting that $7.7 billion in uncollected debt and essentially sort of takes a local revenue stream that I think really rewards some courts, the courts that are good collectors, in terms of being able to move forward on some of their administration of justice and equal access to justice programs. So is there a way, or does the governor or your office contemplate a way to sort of segregate the local revenues that the courts, are all over the board on in California, being able to set those aside or keep those out of this equation of, how you're going to deal with the state allocations to the courts in the future?
The things that we see as purely local revenues, we don't see those as things that would be coming into the mix, but I think that it goes into what's in the definition of local revenues. The dollars that are associated with state-established assessments or state-established fees that are collected at the local level are part of the statewide funding structure, and we would see those as being part of the overall statewide funding structure. We see significant incentives to continue to do collection exist in that, there continue to be an interest in looking at the overall, funding levels. And looking at maintaining program and looking at moving forward and administering these requirements as they've been established in law. I think if if there are particular ideas that we should take a look at, let us know. But we see those as assessments that have been established by the legislature and efforts that have been. Efforts by the courts and by the legislature to try to find alternative fund sources to minimize the impact as the general fund resources have been diminished. And we see those as part of the overall funding picture, and they would be part of the statewide. They would not be in a separate account at the local level in our judgment.
And, Chief, if I may, one more quick question. So I wanted to follow up on what Justice Baxter asked about earlier, because right now you've come up with a $402 million figure, and we don't really know how the year is going to end up in terms of trial court reserves or fund balances. So, and to be able to make allocations in July, we obviously can't hold up the allocations until all the numbers roll in and we figure out who really has what. So do you contemplate some kind of an adjustment at mid-year if it turns out that my court has a higher reserve level than the 20% discount would have accounted for, or another court has a lower than 20% reserve or has less than that 20% discount level? How would all of that work so that we don't end up with a real problem where some courts that had, costly obligations this year and spent them on those programs prior to the date of the announcement of the May revise so that they're not penalized?
The statewide allocation and the statewide appropriation would be at the lower level. So I think in my mind it's more of a question of we are saying 3%. But if there's, based on information, a sense that things should be at a – is that the right number? Is it too high? Is it too low? In light of this information, I appreciate, Justice Baxter's question relates to a very – it's a very practical issue about we're looking at what's the best information that we have available, but the information is limited. So we see the allocation of the 3% as where some of those issues are addressed in terms of if there are commitments that were made in those reserves that can't be changed. That would be where the types of things that we would see as falling into the emergency or unavoidable cost categories that would the reserve would be available for.
Thank you very much.
Judge So, then Justice Hull.
Would it be fair to say that this is a conscious policy shift on behalf of your office, that you weighed and balanced some of the things that Ms. Turner talked about, the incentives of collecting, and in your judgment, this shift is necessary to equalize the spending and for access to justice in all of California? Is that kind of the bottom line here?
Yeah, and in the governor's judgment, and, you know, my judgment is only as relevant as it's consistent with his. It's we have a state judicial system. We have a state system of local courts. And we should be looking at making these changes in a manner that we can make sure that we have, you know, equal access to justice, but we manage this program as a statewide program. And that's the rationale for the proposal.
Justice Hull, then Judge Elias.
Thank you again, Chief. Ms. Montesanos, going back to an answer, an answer you gave a moment ago, I want to make sure I understand it and it's working. I think you said that there would be specificity by statute as to the amount of reserves on a court-by-court basis that would be offset. Did I understand that properly?
Yes, there would be specificity on saying this is how the allocation is to occur, and the allocation of we have to work on exactly how we talk about this 402 and the 402 on a by county and by jurisdiction basis. But the statute would be very clear about the allocation that would otherwise be provided is going to be offset by the available reserve.
That suggests to me, though, that I don't know who, perhaps the administration, is going to determine reserves on a 58-county basis, county by county. Is that what we're facing here, where I don't know how one can be specific in a statute as to the reserves that would be offset without having some sort of a study as to the reserves that are available?
There would have to be a state-level determination of the available reserves, and how best at the state level to make that determination. Is that something that, should we say it's 402 and it works this way? Should it be, in consultation with finance, or exactly how we do it? There has to be a state-level determination of the 58 counties' available reserves. Our estimate is that is 402.
So it really isn't a county-by-county determination. It's a statewide estimate.
It's a statewide determination based on county-by-county available balances as they were in 10-11, reduced by this 20% assumption.
And then that'll be done by the end of this fiscal year? Is that my understanding correct?
The calculation and the specificity about the available reserves will have to be done in time for the allocations to occur, and the allocations will occur at the beginning of the next fiscal year.
Judge Elias.
Yes, mine's really following. So you're taking some reserves on a certain day? You've picked a day that's the day that the reserves... I can't quite understand how you're going to decide what the reserves are. And are you, once you decide, are you going to have those be checked with the individual courts to see whether those really are their reserves?
What we're looking at is basically saying when the allocations are made, the allocations are offset by the reserves. So it's at that point in time, the determination is made and specified in the context of offsetting the allocations.
I'm
wondering if my colleague Amy wants to expand.
But is there a given date, like you're going to take a snapshot on a certain day, and is that how you decide the reserves?
The determination of the available reserves will occur before the allocations are made, and the allocations will be made in the beginning of the year. So it's basically, we did an evaluation of reserves in 10-11, we discount it, those reserves are available on a county-by-county basis. And then I've asked this, my colleague Amy Jarvis, who may help me expand here if she has ideas on how to make it a little more clear. But basically, as we look at it, we say, before in the budget act, the enacted budget act, it was specified, and basically at the time that the allocations are done, the allocations would have to be offset. So it's looking at what are the reserves at that point in time, and it's going to be based on an estimate before that point in time.
So you don't have the date yet on which you're going to decide what the reserves are.
It's going to be an assumption included in the budget act.
So are you going to send the assumptions out to everybody so they can see how they
and if it makes
with reality?
And if it makes sense to set up a follow-up discussion and process with on this issue of exactly how do we arrive at the number, we're happy to do it. I mean, our judgment is that the Budget Act needs to be and the statute needs to be very clear about how this process is to work in order to make the allocations happen early. We can provide a sense of what's our estimate based on what we know on 10-11. And we can try to have some more discussion so that we can make this as workable as possible. We don't want to hold up cash for a really long period of time in the beginning of the next fiscal year. And we see the distribution of the statewide allocation as the place where we make adjustments with things that need to be adjusted. There may be a need to change some planned expenditures and to look at disencumbrances of previously planned expenditures. We're looking at, we're not saying that it's all idle cash that there wasn't a plan for. We're just saying that it's cash that we believe is available to fund operations, and we believe it's dollars that can be redirected for this purpose.
Judge Wesley, then Judge Friedman.
That's fine. I'll wait. Are you ready?
You can go ahead.
All right. Like Mr. Carlson, I believe that now our reductions total about one-fifth of the general fund support for the trial courts. In other areas where you've made changes like this, for example, the CDCR, they were accompanied by large-scale programmatic changes. Do you anticipate large-scale programmatic changes for the courts? Without the money, do you anticipate that we'll be doing all of the things we're presently doing, or do you anticipate there will be things that are taken for the court and, for lack of a better word, realigned?
In terms of, as we look at the dollars, we agree with you that the general fund support has been roughly one-fifth. However, the reduction has not been one-fifth. Based on our review of the dollars, the funds have actually been relatively level, and they have increased some. And that has been a shift from the general fund to other fund sources. So as we look at going forward, we do see that some of the one-time solutions that were available in 11-12 and some of the one-time solutions that are available in the coming year are not going to be available in 13-14. And we see some of those reductions. If there are programmatic changes that should be brought forward to the legislature for consideration, if there are statutory requirements and things that would make it easier for you to be able to achieve some savings, I think those would be good issues for us to work in partnership through the work group and look at those as we see 13-14 as the really difficult year from an operational standpoint, because it's the year when these one-time solutions will have been exhausted for the trial court program, and when the changes have to be made in order to be able to operationalize, and I hate using IZE word, to make operational changes to be able to achieve the level of resources that would be provided.
Judge Friedman.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for your presentation. I have, maybe I'm confused. I understand that the general fund reduction is $300 million to the branch. The offset from the reserves is $400 million, $402 million as you estimate it. Where does the $100 million difference go?
The $100 million is based on looking at our assessment of how much you were looking at already redirecting from the reserves in order to maintain program and to provide additional years for the reductions that were made in 11-12 to actually be operationalized. So we basically said there's 562, offset it by 20%. You've already got plans for 100 based on the transmission of information that was provided to the legislature in January. So then we're looking at $300 million of dollars that we think are available as an additional one-time solution to offset the general fund cost. Does that help?
Thank you. Answered my question.
Thank you.
Justice Baxter.
A number of judges have expressed concern, some alarm, with having an executive branch commission basically looking over judicial branch policies. And wondered if any consideration has been given to basically requiring that the judicial branch conduct, create and pursue that, the work of that commission.
The thought is that this would be something that we would do together, something that would be done in partnership with the judiciary, and that we work together on the scope to make sure that it's clear to things that have to do with the structures that are set forth in statute, with the administrative side of the house as it's been set forth in law, and how it relates to try to stick to the things that are not and are unrelated to the actual administration of justice, which are the separation of powers we don't want to affect. We want to do this in partnership with the judiciary. We want to work with you on how best to convene it. We think it's important that it's something that is a group that is representative of the judiciary, but that also includes Department of Finance and other stakeholders from the executive branch, and we also anticipate interest from the legislative branch to look at the statutes that have been set forth. Have we set up the right structures as the state made these changes? Should we it's something that we should do together, because many of these elements have to do with what's the underlying law that the legislature has set forth, as well as getting a better sense of how are things working, what are the cost structures looking like from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, what are the staffing standards from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, and looking at some of those issues. So it's something that we think it makes sense to do together. Not any one branch putting it together.
I would urge consideration of it ultimately being a commission created by the Chief Justice with participation and membership of the executive branch representatives that you've mentioned, and the same objectives that are currently there. So I'm hopeful that this is something that that can be negotiated with the time available.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Justice Hull.
Thank you again, Chief. Ms. Montesanto's on a slightly different subject. Of the $544 million that we see in the May revision, we've all noted that $125 million of that, including you, is a permanent reduction to the branch. And I'm interested in the administration's thinking as to why it is appropriate to make that a permanent further budget reduction to the branch.
Because the governor is constitutionally required to balance the budget, and the legislature is constitutionally required to balance the budget. The revenue initiative that the governor is working to achieve is an important part of the budget solution, and the budget assumes the revenues associated with that. But we continue to have an ongoing structural shortfall in excess at around $8 billion. And in order to balance that budget in an ongoing manner, in the governor's judgment, additional reductions are necessary, and that includes some additional reductions to the judiciary, some that we think can be achieved through changes and rescoping of the construction programs and other additional savings that would be achieved. These are not reductions that the governor looks at lightly or things that that from a public policy standpoint would be necessarily be his preferred choice, but they're a function of what he believes is necessary and appropriate in light of the fiscal situation in which the state faces.
Thank you.
Ms. Matasantos, I have a question, and I believe you were here for part of that, but we've heard from public speakers who've indicated to us that we should be looking elsewhere for the cuts within our branch. And I note that as you've described and as if you walk through our budget, that there are also cuts made to the AOC, the Supreme Court, and the Court of Appeal. And so I wanted to know if you can share your thinking with how this kind of cut was structured to the judicial branch and the way it was. Did you consider looking to the AOC as suggested and the courts of review?
Our thought is you have already made some reductions and some ongoing reductions in other areas of the budget. You have achieved savings and ongoing savings in the Supreme Court, achieved ongoing savings in the Court of Appeal. The Judicial Council's budget we see is having been reduced by $13 million, about 10%, from 2010-11 to 2012-13. And we do look at some additional reductions in those areas, and those additional reductions are the specified $4 million in additional reductions that the governor is proposing through the change in compensation and retirement contributions for state employees that work for the state court level.
Thank you. Any more questions at this time? Ms. Mata Santos and Amy, I didn't catch your last name, but we are grateful, as indicated here by many, for your presentation. And, of course, it's a lot to digest, and we have a number of questions. So we continue to look forward to your generosity in answering questions and your reciprocity as we move forward in trying to make our pitch to you to reduce our cuts, eliminate our cuts, make them one time, et cetera. But we thank you for being here today and having this difficult conversation with us.
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate your consideration, and I appreciate the difficult task that you face ahead.
Thank you. At this time, then, given the hour, it's 12:38. We're going to take a half an hour lunch break and start up again with item C, which is a Q&A as needed regarding the judicial branch budget impact. With our Chief Financial Officer and Director of Finance, Zlatko Theodorovich. So we're going to break for the meeting then for half an hour.